This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. The word redistricting is an obscure-sounding political term to describe the redrawing of district maps that determine how candidates for political office are elected. Since 2010, the Republican Party has figured out how to hijack this process with a simple plan in place to favor its candidates and sweep state legislatures across the country. The colloquial term to describe this practice is called gerrymandering, and my guest, David Daly, has written a book about it with a title that FCC rules prevent me from saying on the air. David Daly is editor-in-chief of Salon. He's a digital media fellow for the Wilson Center for Humanities and the Arts and the Grady School of Journalism at the University of Georgia. And his new book is called, well, I'll just say Rat Effed, the true story behind the secret plan to steal America's democracy. Welcome to the program, David.
Thanks so much for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us. Okay, where does this term that we can't say on the air come from, rat effed? What exactly does it describe? It's not just a clever title for your book, but I understand it's sort of a behind-the-scenes term that people in Washington kind of get. They know what it means.
They most certainly do. I mean, it's a term that goes back, 100 years in political history. It goes back to Watergate. It was a word that, when Woodward and Bernstein heard it coming from some of the Nixon hands, that they brought it to their sources at the Justice Department, and they said, oh, you can go straight to the top on that one. But it also has a really specific tie in with redistricting. The Republican Party figured out how to take over Congress in two waves. There was a wave in the 1990s, and then there was the wave in the 2010s that I write about in this book. But in the 1990s, the strategy was to use the Voting Rights Act in the South, which mandated the drawing of majority-minority seats. And the goal there was to increase the representation of minorities in Congress. Lee Atwater, who had run George Bush's winning campaign in 1988, takes over the Republican National Committee. Soon thereafter, in 89, he hires a young attorney named Ben Ginsburg, who we would all meet later when Ginsburg ran Bush versus Gore for Bush's son. And he went to Ginsburg and said, your job is to figure out how to do something about redistricting. And what Ginsburg came up with in the 90s was something called the Unholy Alliance between African Americans in the South who wanted to increase their ranks and representation, and Republicans who wanted to pack all the Democrats into a couple of districts that may well elect a minority, but they also knew that by doing that they would make all of the other districts surrounding that more Republican. Worked very, very well. In 1994, the Republican Party takes over Congress for the first time in decades, and Ben Ginsburg is asked about whether their plan had a name by a reporter. And he says, no, it didn't. But if it did, we may well have called it a project, a rat bleep.
Hmm. So let's talk about the modern method of rat effing that the Republicans have figured out. You start your book with the 2008 election of Barack Obama, and in 2009, when he was being inaugurated, Republicans looked at the scene, and the media was also pronouncing essentially that this was the beginning of the end of the GOP. But they didn't quite, of course, as we know, as history has borne out, simply rest on their laurels. What did they figure out and put into place in 2009 that reaped very big rewards in the next election?
I think Democrats thought after 2008 that they had the demographic stranglehold on the future. And what they didn't realize is that the much more important election was going to be in 2010. And that would end up in some ways being the more important election. Every 10 years, in the years that end in zero, is when every congressional and legislative seat in the country is redrawn from the state level up to the federal level. So an election in a year ending in a zero means more. It reverberates throughout the course of the next decade. So the Republicans looked at this and they said, we can come up with a really cheap and effective strategy here to try to flip legislative chambers across the country, control the redistricting process in each of these states, and draw ourselves more favorable lines. It's called the gerrymander, and it's the oldest trick in the book. It goes all the way back to 1790. You can trace it back to the founding of the American Republic. Except what they did in 2010 was different from any gerrymander that had ever happened before. And what they were able to do was use the combination of money that was unleashed by the Citizens United case, which is decided by the courts in January of 2010, which unleashes a flood of anonymous money into the political system. And then the new technologies to draw lines, to draw these districts, had advanced to a place that it had never been before. Even in 1990, even in 2000, both of those sort of in the computer era, redistricting was essentially a horse and buggy operation, even in 2000. By 2010, you've gone from the horse and buggy era, you know, a blasted off into the rocket ship era. That's how much it changed just in those 10 years.
So, David, how did they go about doing this redistricting to win over legislatures? Don't you need to win legislatures to do the redistricting?
So first you have to win all of those seats. And what they did was they spent $30 million in states like Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Ohio, Michigan, North Carolina, Texas, Florida. They targeted just enough seats to flip control of the chambers in each of these states. They studied how redistricting works in each of these states so that they would own each piece of it and the Democrats wouldn't have a veto power or a say at any course in the process. They win enough elections, they flip these districts, and then in 2011, they unleash more money and these master map makers to draw new lines. And of course, the first election that these new lines are run on is the 2012 election. So Barack Obama back on the ballot again. He's reelected very easily. He gets 332 electoral votes. Democrats in 2012 take something like 23 of the 33 Senate seats that are up. Democratic candidates for the House of Representatives receive 1.4 million more votes nationally in the aggregate than Republican candidates. And yet, Republicans still managed to hold the House with 235 votes. Those lines were drawn so well that they managed to be a firewall against a 1.4 million vote majority.
Okay, so let's
break this. This is the first time since 1972. It's the first time in 40 years that the party with the most votes doesn't also take control of the chamber.
Okay, so let's break this down and you know, because this is a complicated and very obscure sounding concept. So basically, we have to break our country up into districts because each group of people or each neighborhood of people that live among one another want to elect their own representatives. If the lines are just drawn in the most straightforward manner that one would expect them to be drawn, you'd get a fair process. And generally, you would get the party that won the most votes just in sheer numbers would win the most seats in sheer numbers. But if you draw the lines in a convoluted way to selectively choose the right numbers of people of the right kind of political persuasion, you could win an election even with fewer votes. Is that accurate?
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. So take a state like Pennsylvania, which is one of my favorite examples of this. In 2012, Barack Obama wins the state by several hundred thousand votes. Democratic House candidates win by more than 100,000 votes if you add up the entire aggregate vote. And yet, Republicans take 13 of the 18 seats.
Wow.
So Democrats receive 51% of the vote and 28% of the seats. And that's what happens when you draw the lines in such a way as to pack all of the Democrats into five districts that they win with 75, 80% of the vote. And then you give yourself all of the other ones that you still win comfortably, but at a smaller margin, 56, 57%. And you end up taking much more of them.
So then the total number of districts with Democratic majorities is fewer, and you have more districts with Republican majorities, some of them with big majorities, some of them with small majorities. So
And then you spread that out across all of these other states. The exact same thing happens in Ohio, in Wisconsin, in Florida, and it adds up to enough votes and enough congressional seats that it really matters.
And so you get these really convoluted looking maps that look like just some, you know, ridiculous. And we were, for our TV audience, we're showing some of these maps on our screen. They look nothing like what you would expect a congressional district to look like.
That's what democracy looks like. That's democracy in action right there.
Okay, so the Republicans are really open about this, right? There's a website, Red Map. The plan is out in the open. It's even legal. I mean, on their map,
you
they
can
basically
see it.
Yeah, they you know, they
you can see it all right there. The strategists behind this were more than willing to talk about it. It's legal. It's, to some people, politics as usual. And if you ask them if they think it's fair, they say, yes, the other side should have come up with the same idea. You can't blame us for having a really good idea if the other party simply didn't do anything about it. And the amazing thing is that the Republicans announced their intention to do this in big flashing neon lights. I mean, Karl Rove writes an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal, which is, you know, not a small newspaper, and he says, we are going to target state legislative races with the intention of taking chambers and redrawing lines that favor us. He says, when you draw the lines, you make the rules. And I don't know if the Democrats just weren't looking at the Wall Street Journal that day or if they were just completely asleep at the wheel. But it was a catastrophic strategic error on the part of the Democratic Party, and they will be paying for it for the rest of this decade and possibly into the next one as well.
And so the effect of gerrymandering on our democracy seems quite significant, but some people take issue with that. You point out in your book, Nate Cohn, for example, has basically, you know, undermined that argument, saying that gerrymandering might have some effect, but it's really overstated. What do you make of it?
I think that the people who believe that the effect of gerrymandering is overstated don't understand how what happened in 2010 was different from any other time prior to this. They may well have been right for the course of American history, but it changed in 2010, and this is radically different. My favorite example is still Pennsylvania. Barack Obama wins Pennsylvania by a similar margin in 2008 and in 2012. Congressional Democrats receive about the same number of votes in 2008 in Pennsylvania as they did in 2012. In 2008, those votes resulted in 12 congressional seats. In 2012, it equaled 5. So you can say that gerrymandering doesn't matter, but what changed between 2008 and 2012? The lines.
So
the big theory they call is the big sort, and they say that, you know, like-minded people like to live together, and that's the reason why, you know, all the Democrats live in the city, so as a result, they pack themselves in themselves. But if you are to believe that, you would have to believe that between 2008 and 2012, hundreds of thousands of voters in Pennsylvania sorted themselves into districts around Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. It just didn't happen. It's not true. It's the lines.
I mean, I don't know the political persuasion of my neighbors. Anyway, okay, so here's, so what is really, of course, amazing about all of this, I want to step back and kind of speculate. This is a party, and I'm no fan of the Democrats by any means, but the Republican Party, from what they've done, seem to me to be saying, we can't get enough votes from Americans through legitimate means, so we're going to take an unethical, albeit legal, approach to win elections, because if we did it fairly, we simply wouldn't have enough votes because our ideology is the ideology of a minority. Is that taking it too far?
You're right. I think that's exactly right. And I think that all of the other things that are happening with the Voting Rights Act and voter ID bills and putting an end to early voting, I mean, these are the tactics that you use when you know you won't win a fair fight based on ideas and based on your numbers. And it's deeply undemocratic.
Let's talk about the future. On that website, redmap.org, they are again announcing what they're going to do. The Republican the Redistricting Majority Project, or MAP, Red Map, says Republicans have an opportunity to create 20 to 25 new Republican congressional districts through the redistricting process over the next five election cycles, solidifying a Republican House majority. We could not have succeeded and cannot continue to succeed without your support. That's their appeal to their base to fund them to do this. Yes. And so do the Democrats have any plan to counter this, or is it too late now? They have to wait till the next census?
The Democrats have to run on these maps until the next census, yes. But it's going to take at least that long if they want to try to unwind this at all. The system has been locked in and tied into knots in so many places that it's going to have to be undone over the course of many, many years. I don't know if the Democratic Party can figure it out in time for 2020. Mm-hmm. I would be surprised if they could. They have their own version of Red Map that they're trying to put into place in 2020. It's called Advantage at 2020.
And they're trying to
raise $7 million for it. And essentially what they're trying to do is run the same play as the Republicans, except there'd be no element of surprise this time. They're going to have less money than the Republicans to do it with. And most importantly, they still have to run and win on the maps that the Republicans drew.
In order to change the maps, right.
It is not going to be an easy road for them. I mean, it's going to take a lot of time, and I don't think they're doing enough to strategize and plan. And in the meantime, the Republicans announced that they're going to do Red Map at 2020, and they're going to have something like $125 million for it. So
wow.
The Democrats are already starting out underfunded for something like this. And
so
really, all this does is throw more money into the system. It makes
right.
State and local races prohibitively expensive. It's not good for our politics. None of this is good for our politics.
So, David, just to clarify, these maps, do they determine? I mean, I'm a political journalist. I should know this, but it's so complex that sometimes it's easy to lose track of it. Do these political maps determine everything below the presidential race, essentially congressional districts, but also state legislatures? And so these maps determine majorities and minorities in the House and Senate, but also in state-level houses and Senates?
You are completely right. I mean, so what has happened is that the system is gerrymandered not only at the federal level, but it's gerrymandered at the state level. And to undo the federal gerrymander, you also have to undo the state gerrymander. That's why it is so complicated.
And these state gerrymanders have given us the bathroom bills, anti-abortion bills, the gun laws, all of these state by state, you know, the voting rights violations or you know, straight up undermining
bills
of them.
Coming out of Michigan and Wisconsin. Absolutely. I mean, if you look at the bathroom bill, it's opposed by 60% of the voters of North Carolina. It is there because the North Carolina legislature has been so severely gerrymandered that a small extreme element of the Republican Party has taken control of the state. It's deeply antithetical to democracy. I mean, the numbers that we talk about at the federal level about more Democratic votes than Republican votes also holds up at the state level. If you take a state like Ohio, more voters cast ballots for Democratic members of the Ohio State House in 2012 than Republicans.
Right.
And yet, the lines were drawn so perfectly to favor the Republicans that The GOP won a 60-39 supermajority despite a minority of votes.
Well, David, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and helping to shed some light on these Republican shenanigans. Thanks so much.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
My guest is David Daley, Editor-in-Chief of Salon Digital Media, Fellow for the Wilson Center for Humanities and the Arts and the Grady School of Journalism at the University of Georgia. We've been talking about his new book. We'll call it Rat Effed. You can guess what that is. The True Story Behind the Secret Plan to Steal America's Democracy is a subtitle. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.